brought to you by Communications by Design. This is the Transforming Learning Podcast, where we talk with teachers about classroom strategies that elevate teaching and learning. Our mission is to support teachers. So if you hear a strategy or idea that you find helpful, share the episode with others and subscribe to the podcast. We always appreciate feedback, so take a moment to leave a review as well. You can dive deeper into our resources and services or connect with our instructional coaches immediately by visiting cbdconsulting.com/elevateedu. We hope you enjoy.
Ultimately, I want students to not feel alone. The end. Yeah. I mean, I'll go on with that. But I mean, when a person feels that way, he or she can't reach his or her own potential.
For episode 22, we're going to change things up again. So here's Pete to share a little bit of background about this episode.
This is Pete Grostick. On today's episode, I'll be speaking with David Tooney, a teacher, presenter, and writer. He's been teaching English language arts for the past 15 years at Spring Lake High School. He is the author of two published books and manages the Share Chair podcast, part of his Elevate Empathy movement, which you can find in your favorite podcast player. David has received many awards and recognition for his work. He was the 2016 Michigan Council for Teachers of English Teacher of the Year, and was recognized by the National Council of Teachers of English as a 2016 Teacher of Excellence. Recently, David received the Fulbright Award for Teaching Excellence, which is given to only 35 recipients nationwide. As part of the award, he and his family will spend 5 months in the Netherlands. We discuss the implications of Fulbright in today's conversation and how it connects to David's Elevate Empathy movement. I hope you enjoy. And now I bring you David Tooney.
I'm here with David Tooney. David, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Yeah, it's fun. I'm happy to do it. It's weird to be the subject of a podcast.
Yeah, well, I expect we'll talk quite a bit about your podcast as we go through. I'd really kind of like to track the Elevate Empathy movement from its inception down to its future.
Yeah, sure.
But before we do that, our listeners certainly have heard your bio, but I'd love to hear kind of your why, your purpose statement for getting into education from the beginning, why you're still in it. You know, what's your why?
Yeah, this is going to be a long podcast. So sure, I can, in a weird way, I came into education at 26. And in a weird way, I'm really thankful that I came in just a few years after my undergrad, because it allowed the why to be more solid, to be more like real. And so, boy, I mean, I got to trace this back to like being in leadership roles even when I was in high school, you know, just sort of being around. My dad was a minister, and so I was put into positions where, you know, helping out with youth group, all kinds of stuff like that. And that was cool and fine, but, you know, I didn't really tie that to being a teacher, not when I was younger. But even in high school then, I actually wanted to be a math teacher. I was really good at math. I loved math in high school. Loved English. Loved it all. And just kind of whatever. I just go for the ride, you know. And but left that idea when I fell in love with theater. So I fell in love with theater in high school, but then really actually pursued it as a career for, well, all of my undergrad, and then even got into grad school at Case Western Reserve University in Cleveland, got into grad school for an MFA, and then had this transformative experience, which was when I was there in Cleveland, 3-year program to get a master's, I needed money. So I needed money. And so for the summer, I found a job teaching kids about theater. So I kind of combined my love of theater with, like, well, just needing some cash and having this opportunity to make some decent money teaching like summer programs for kids. And actually, it was with public school kids who needed summer programs for, in Cleveland public schools. I wasn't a teacher, but they had I have to give it up to Cleveland Public Schools. They brought in artists. This was actually a citywide program, or at least part of the city decided to do this, where they brought in various artists. Could have been painters, could have been, so they did, the kids were doing more core curricular stuff in the morning, going through that, and then artists were brought in the afternoon, and they would help them with art and different things like that. And my role was as a theater teacher. And I'll tell you, Pete, it was one of those moments where it's like, I think it might have been day one or day two that I came home to Nikki, my wife, and said, I think I have to stop my MFA in theater and be a teacher.
No like, way.
That was amazing. I just remember loving it so much. And, you know, we were newly married, and it was challenging. She was working for a TV station there, and I was doing theater. We were being pulled in very different directions in our first year or two of marriage. And just going like, well, all of a sudden the lifestyles we were choosing and the careers we were choosing just didn't feel to mesh with what we wanted anyway. You know, just everything was in this bit of upheaval. And I loved working with these kids, especially on theater. And I said, maybe I don't want to practice theater. Maybe I just want to build the love of it for other people, right? So that's what happened. We agreed to change our lives, really change it on a dime. I stopped going to, that was a summertime job. I didn't quite let myself believe it. So I did go back for one more term of my MFA. So I finished half of that program. And then, but it was that winter where we had gotten to the point where it's like, yeah, it's time to pursue other things. And so that brought me back to Michigan at Grand Valley State University. And now I was fully focused. So I had to get in my English, my education degree, I had to get all that good to go. And so then I was like all in on the why. I want to matter. I just want to matter. I want to matter to kids. I want to have a feeling of influence. At this point now, from my math in high school, having gone through all of my theater training, I'd learned the huge value of storytelling, right? And building something, actually. So when you're in theater, you're constantly building. You have words on a page, but then you have to construct a full something, a physical, tangible, like watchable item in a few weeks, you know, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, under the guidance of a director, sure, but it's powerful when you do that. And it's also powerful to be like, I mean, with theater, you have to literally stand in another person's shoes, right? You have to take on, or really not take on, but I'd actually say like find within yourself the components of the character and bring those out and into the character to give to the audience. And so I just wanted to matter. I wanted to tell the value of a story. I wanted to share that with people. So I'd fallen in love with storytelling and like English and literature. I mean, we always reading dozens of plays every year, dozens of reading now like crazy in college. And so the switch to English was obvious.
There's a fairly common narrative, and it's hard to dispute, that it's kind of a tough time to be a teacher now.
Yeah.
In 2018. So how is that why evolved for you to where you know you're still in this now?
I don't know, Pete. If I actually, in answering that, I would say there's not been much evolution, because if the why changed to, well, I need to make sure I'm making a living, I need to make sure I'm making X amount of money to get my kids better set up for their college education, I might actually change the job, right? I think the evolution is actually going, no, I'm cemented in this idea that I can make a difference, because I've seen it play out. Like, in some way, it's like the why hasn't changed, and that's why I still need to be a teacher. Like, I need to show kids the value of stories, the value of empathy, the value of creating, making something that is lasting, can make an impression or persuade somebody. And all those skills are like critical. Analyze. All those skills are critical in the English classroom. So in a weird way, I'd say no, it hasn't evolved. You know, talking to even some former students who are now in training to be teachers, I'd say, yeah, you've got to love it. It's got to be a passion. Your own passion project is to matter to our youth, you know, to kids. And if it doesn't, if that's not... that boy, that's got to be number one. That and relationships. You know, you have to want the relationships. And listen, curriculum, good assessment. I mean, all that stuff is like so critical. So I don't want to dismiss that at all. But for me, always the foundation has been on relationship. Can I show the students that they should trust me, that I'm not going to burn them with information they give me, that I'm not going to... you know, that I'm just going to be trustworthy, I guess, respectful. And then when I show them that, then usually they give it back, and then we can do all the other important work.
You know? Yeah, yeah. So let's jump into some of that important work. You've had really a whole litany of projects that we could really dive into. You've shared a bunch with me. We've known each other for five or years or so now.
It's so weird. It flies by. I love that, but it totally flies by. How is that possible? We've known each other for 5 years. And I don't know how it's possible I've been teaching for 15. Like, for real, I feel like really young still.
it must be fun. They say somebody said time flies. You're right.
I guess you're having fun. Yeah. I guess so. Yeah.
But I think it's clear, David, the Elevate Empathy movement has a special meaning for you, and so I'd love to kind of track that. And if we stop along the way to visit some of these other projects, great. But let's maybe start with you've you know, with the Elevate Empathy movement, some of the big things were a community book study. Yep. You wrote a book. You published it. You've got a podcast. Mm-hmm. Let's go back to the beginning, the genesis of it. Why did this begin? How did it begin?
The earliest I can remember it beginning, because I suppose the earliest I remember was me having my own struggle, really, of when I moved from in third grade all the way back to third grade when I moved from Iowa to Michigan. It was October, and I was excited, but it took a little while. It took quite a while for me to find my feet, you know, and be comfortable here. So you kind of flash forward 25 years or so, and I don't know, bullying's bullying, cruelty always has bothered me. And has always been a passion of mine, I guess, or something I've paid attention to. But what happened was I was reading journals, and as an English teacher, you know, if you do some journaling, some writing with the students just to get them practice with literacy, you'll see this from time to time, where somebody shares something that surprises you, you know. And that's what happened. One student wrote about an experience. And it's important to know, like, this student, it kind of fits a classic, like, what you might see in some movie about this kind of a thing, where it fits this classic where I didn't expect it. In fact, she, I thought, was, like, really self-confident, presented herself in ways that I thought she was just totally smooth, that the high school experience was easy for her and all that. But it wasn't, you know, that's a veneer, it's a mask to what she was really experiencing, which were these whispers in the hallway when she'd pass. Things like she even wrote down, things like teachers can't see. It wasn't like a blame thing, right? It wasn't so obvious as somebody pushing someone against a locker. In that way, the movies get it really wrong, you know? Her experience was not so aggressive. It was demeaning, I guess. And she wrote about it. And when I read that, it started me on a summer tour of reading and writing and watching things. So I was writing my own history with bullying, realizing that I've played all three parts, the bully, the bullied, the bystander. I've played all three. Most of us have played all three parts at one point in our lives. And so I was doing a lot of writing about that, was watching documentaries about bullying, and started reading books. And one of those books I came across was Emily Bazelon's Sticks and Stones, it's called. She works for New York Magazine. She's huge. Emily Bazelon. Yeah.
And she wrote a little blurb on your book, Elevate Empathy.
Yeah. Which was really cool. Yeah. when I contacted her and said, well, this has come really out of your work. So could you write something for us? And she said, absolutely, which was, you know, just one of those other lessons of, like, you have to ask.
Right. Yeah. Sure.
I mean, she could have said no, and that would have been, I would have been in the same place I was before. Anyway, so I read her book, and her book was, again, transformative. It was just like, because she was, what I loved so much about the book is she was really talking about the complexities of the issue. I think a lot of us want to think, the bully's the bully, the bullied is the bullied, and that's it. But often the bully has been bullied, the bullied has been the bully of someone else, and it gets really messy. And way too often we only really discuss this when it's heated. So when I've been accused of being a bully, or when I've been hurt by being bullied. And rarely, I think, actually our schools, I'm proud of our school for having conversations a lot without it being in the heat of the moment. But I don't think that's always been the case. And so so I just said, let's do a community book study and of that book. It was so good, really thinking about all the tough stuff. So we did like a three-month read, September, October, November read of her book with different activities throughout the time. Very few face-to-face because that's hard to do to get. We ended up with almost 250 people reading the book in our community, parents, students, teachers, administrators, business people, grandparents. It was awesome. It was a great experience. And but we did very few face-to-face, knowing everyone was so busy. We did a lot of online discussions, which was great, right? Trying to model, hey, this online stuff can be good. It gets a lot of flack for being all negative or bad, but it can be good. These are the ways in which it can be good. So that was fun. And then ultimately, we did have some face-to-face at the end. And at the very end, we actually called it the launch. The ending meeting with everybody together was called the launch, because what are we going to do now? I mean, we have this information, we've had this good experience, but what now? And one of the things that came out of there is we have to share our stories, because that's a big part of her book, is there's strength in owning your story. And you'll find unexpected connections when you start sharing how you feel, right? And this isn't like me saying this. These are people who study this. There's strength in sharing how you feel, because then you get connected with people you never knew, you know, with whom you could be connected. And so so it was like, tell stories. And my English brain's just like, well, how do we do that? We write a book, okay? Let's write a book. And so we wrote a book titled Elevate Empathy, and in it we talked the first half of how to build your own book club, kind of hoping other communities would have their own book clubs in the community, and then the second half are stories from our community about times that they learned about empathy. So it started with sharing stories, and we had, you know, the book is published, it's good, it's available on Amazon, I'm really proud of it.
I'll just chip in here.
Yeah.
It's great.
Thank you.
It's phenomenal.
Thank you. Yeah. Thanks. And we're really proud of it, But Pete, as it turns out, publishing books is hard to do and really took a long time and a lot of love and all that. And I just started thinking, okay, definitely see the value in sharing stories. That's clear. How can we do that more, but easier? I want to be careful with saying easier, actually. It's a lot of work, what I'm about to talk about. Well, what we're doing right now. It's a lot of work, but it's faster. You can turn it around faster than a book, okay, which is a podcast. And getting teens to tell their stories about how it is to be a teenager, how it is to be them. I mean, honestly, we don't, the whole mission of the Share Chair podcast, so we went from book club to building a book to having a podcast. That's been the kind of transformation of this whole thing. And so we have a podcast starting out of Spring Lake, and we've drawn in other schools. So the whole idea is, tell us your story. Just what makes us you. It could be something that is hurtful or sad, but it's not like we're looking for bullying stories. Like, actually, not at all. We're just looking for, like, how do you live in the world? What is it like to be you? Because then, again, what we're really looking for are those unexpected connections. Who's listening to it going, I know that feeling. I don't know that person, but I know that feeling. And therefore, I know that person, you know, or at least I know a piece of that person. So if I ever run into that person in the hall or in the community, like, I'm not going to mock it. Do you know? I'm not going to belittle it. It's been my experience that when we are more aware of each other's stories, we're less likely to pick on them, to nitpick on them.
Can you give us an example or some to kind of sharpen that point a little bit, you know, from the podcast or from one of the stories in the book?
Yeah, so one of my favorite podcast episodes was an early one, episode maybe 7.
Out of how many?
140. Yeah. We're going to be publishing 140 episodes really soon.
Congratulations.
Crazy. Yeah. Thank you. Three years. This is the end of 3 years of doing it. Wow. And, I mean, I don't know if this is interesting for listeners, but it's taken a lot of, like, okay, let's start with this. And then, well, turns out not a lot of people want to hear from teachers, you know, for example. Although our most listened to episode is a loved teacher here, but the other teacher episodes, it's like, yeah, they want to hear from kids, which is not surprising, right? So that's been interesting. It's taken some turns, but one of my favorites is Finn, and Finn was a transitioning student, so from female to male, and just that experience of being able to tell people. He told the story of telling his parents that he wants to transition from female to male. And I'll tell you, as a parent, I'm just like, wow, you know, what a moment that had to be. So I was seeing it from all kinds of perspectives, Pete, right? I was hearing Finn tell me the story, but I was thinking about parents. I was thinking about, Finn talked about the love of his cross-country team and how accepting the cross-country team was, and that just filled me with power. Because one of the fears of me kind of sharing this story is, everything's sad and serious, and aren't kids terrible? No. Here Finn was being empowered by teenagers. That's not true at all. Everything's available when you are working with kids. So yep, cruelty, anger, that exists, but empowerment, leadership, that exists too. And so Finn's was one of my favorite episodes. Although like maybe even in a contrasting way, Maddie Miller, Maddie, who is my assistant with me this year, when we interviewed her last year, was like, I want to work with that girl.
And like, Maddie's a student.
Maddie's a student. Yeah. Thanks. She's a senior. She's going to Michigan, and she's gonna be a doctor who's saving. She's amazing. Just this great kid, you know. But you can pick them out. You can go like, oh, I want it. Like I want that student with me, because we're gonna do good things, you know. And Maddie was one of them. But when we were interviewing her last year, she was just so wow, powerful, and like. But understanding, she was so bright and smart, and was able to express all that, as well as her faith, her love of God. She was able to talk about that in the podcast, and it was cool, empowering, really rich, and spoke, I think, for so many, you know, when she was sharing all that. Hmm. So, yeah, those are a couple episodes that really stand out.
Yeah. Let's talk about Fulbright. This is an amazing, amazing experience you're about to go on, and I'd love for you to talk about what it was like, kind of going through the process of applying and interviewing and getting told that you were getting the award, and where it's going to take you.
Yeah.
But also how it links to the Elevate Empathy movement.
Yeah, it's a tight connection, actually. I'm so excited. Pete, it's weird. I have to say it's weird to be a recipient. You know, I had said earlier, I still feel like a new teacher. And I do in so many ways. I mean, yep, time flies because I'm having fun. But I just feel like there are so many ways I can be better, you know? And so in that way, knowing like, that I want more of myself as a teacher, I don't feel, because I want so much more as a teacher, I don't feel deserving yet of such a big award. Do you know what I mean? It's weird because then I can look at the application and go like, oh, I've done a lot, actually. Like you start putting a podcast like this together and you string together and before that, 10 years of directing theater here, and then the book club, and then the book, and then the podcast, and it's like, all right, well, that's a lot of stuff. But I know there's more to be achieved, and so in that way, I don't feel like worthy yet, but I'm glad someone does, because I'm happy to be going. Because I'm happy to be going, yeah. You know? Like I don't mean to be overly humble about it, too. Like, I know I've done a lot of work. I'm proud of the work. I am proud of the work. So I don't mean to be overly humble about it either. I want to be somewhere in the middle, but it's a weird thing where you just like, I don't know how to feel about it, you know? Mm-hmm. I don't know how to feel about it. I'm crazy excited. I'm so glad it's me. I'm honored, you know, and humbled so I've known for 4 weeks, and so in some ways, oh boy. All right, I guess maybe now I should go back anyway and kind of say how that happened. So is it weird to take maybe my most pride is in my not getting it a year ago, getting the Fulbright a year ago? So 1 year ago, well, 2 years ago, so it would have been November 2016, okay? I had applied for the Fulbright and found out in March that I did not get it. Okay, March of 2017, did not get it. And it was like, you know what, long shot. I mean, the Fulbright name, it's a big award. That's how it goes, you know. But I got this nice email from them, which said, hey, we loved the energy. We really like your work. They didn't say apply again, but they did say, should you apply again, we encourage fix these couple of things in that application. And I was so disappointed that I took some quick reflection at how disappointed I was, how badly I guess I'd wanted it. I kept putting up all these blocks of like, all these sort of blocks, I guess, up to not be too disappointed. But when I actually got the no, it's not going to happen this year, I was disappointed. You know, I realized how much I wanted it at that point. And so so I took stock in that, and I did get that email that said they liked these components, which I thought, I don't know, maybe they do that for everybody, but I don't know. And it felt good to like go, okay, we're close, maybe. And so whatever, you go through the summer, go through the fall. But when the fall, when school started up again, I just remember telling Nikki again, my wife, I go, I think I really want that to happen. And so I applied again in November, and this time when now of 2017, and I heard in March of 2018 when I heard they had asked for an interview, and I'm like, well, that's growth, right? Yeah, trying not to be too excited. That's growth. Some things changed or happened with the application. That's good. And so we had an interview. I had an interview with a Skype interview with two women from the Fulbright Center in the Netherlands. And Pete, we just hit it off. Between the project, between just my excitement for going, my desire to be there, I just loved it. We had a great conversation. I mean, I can't wait to meet these women and be able to talk to them more and have more thorough conversations about what we had just sort of touched on in the interview. And then they were like, you know, the Fulbright will let you know, they have a reveal or like a rollout, I guess, of names and acceptance. So you should look around the beginning of April, or, you know, near April. For word. And as soon as April 1 hit, man, I can't even tell you. I'm just like scroll. I mean, I was checking my email like way more than I should have. Just like unhealthily checking my email. And then all of a sudden, I mean, all the way through spring break. So it's, but then it was 4 weeks ago yesterday, whatever day that was. 4 weeks ago yesterday, boom, it pops up, Fulbright. And, you know, I have it set on my email to give me the first line or whatever. Yeah. And there, the first congratulations you have. And I'm like, well, I better open that up and make sure it's not congratulations. You've been, you know, moved on to the next level. But in fact, congratulations, you are a Fulbright Distinguished Teacher Award winner. And I mean, the first thing I did was forward it to Nikki to make sure I was reading it correctly, and she's amazing, my wife, and she goes, "This is just unbelievable, and we're gonna have the experience of a lifetime." And so, yeah, I feel great about it. I feel great about it. I feel, you know, everything. I feel everything about it. I feel great. I feel a little greedy by it. I feel like I don't want to let my students down. I think that's the weirdest or the most unexpected feeling is I'm ready to prove myself. So here it is. Some might see the award as proof of having proven myself, mm-hmm. and I'm seeing it as an opportunity to prove myself. Mm-hmm. Not just to the Fulbright who's giving me the scholarship, but actually to Spring Lake, and say, like, I'm worthy of you giving me the time to do this. And not that I have proven it, but that I will prove it, both when I'm there as a way of sort of representing West Michigan, Spring Lake specifically, Michigan. We even said, oh, this is a weight to bear, but even the United States education system, really, in some ways, I guess that's true. And then when I come back to school, I'll work to prove myself worthy of the award. Hmm. Yeah, I know I will, because that's how I do it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about the project in the Netherlands. So and you're leaving January of 2019, is that right?
That's right. Okay. So the program runs from the details are still kind of need to be ironed out, but we're looking at it seems to be maybe middle January to middle June. I'm so excited. Actually, I'm excited. I'm going to be relieved of classroom teaching duties for that 5 months with expressly to work on a project. in the Netherlands to kind of have a research project that I want to do. And this is the link of the whole last few years. I want to build a sister relationship with another country, the Netherlands, to work on the Share Chair podcast with me. I want to hear more teenage stories. And so that's the goal, is to go find a teacher, maybe somebody higher up in the educational system who wants to take this on with me, who I want to find a partner for the Share Chair podcast. And not, because I'd thought about this, do I want to just be the coach for them to build their own podcast? And I don't. I want it to be a relationship between the Netherlands and us to build it together and push out those stories from the same place through the Share Chair podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, and everything else, which is going to be part of the job. I want to start getting even more exposure to all the other, you know, to Spotify, to all these other places. So part one, really the most important part for me, is I want to build a relationship with a place in the Netherlands and start sharing our stories. Part two, though, is to try to get a more robust sharing. So we're already on iTunes, but and that's great. But I want to do a little bit more research on like marketing this. I want to actually. So here, okay. Goal number one: build a relationship. But goal number two, actually, Pete, is what could I build there with the real time to actually focus on it, to be like full time on this?
Mm-hmm.
Holy cow! Because there's a lot to say, but that's been one of the things about the podcast is, like everything else, I think it has been worth putting it out there. We give up some in like excellence in sound quality and excellence in interview. I haven't been trained in that, right? We are teachers telling kids stories. We are students helping. I mean, Maddie, telling student stories. And that's great. That is so good. It's worthy giving up some of that professional quality when to have students interviewing students. It's awesome. But I think like this connection is going to be so good, and I'd love to build a more robust way of getting other people on board. So right now I think it feels a little daunting. It feels like a lot of work for educators to do this. Because already in our first 3 years, we've had Muskegon Public Schools, we've had Allendale Public Schools, we've had Hamilton Public Schools, Sparta Middle School. We've had different schools contribute to the podcast, and that's great. But it's a lot of work to put these on, to do the editing, to then do all the sharing. So I want to find a way to do like a how-to contribute to the Share Chair podcast, to either video, booklet, anything like that, and start sharing it around to different nations, to be honest with you, different European nations. I mean, that's the big goal. So goal one is get in the Netherlands, figure out a way to have a sister relationship. But I'd like that then to take us to another level, which is this could be a really international podcast of teenagers telling their stories. And that's what I want to do. So it feels a little daunting to consider an international, you know, podcast. But, so to dream that big. But it also felt at one point a little silly to think of having even one nation in on the podcast. And before that, it felt a little silly to dream of having a podcast. And before that, it felt a little silly to dream about having a book. You know what I'm saying? So, like, in some ways, I'm like, Dave, that's pretty lofty. But in other ways, it's like, but my lofty things have happened. My lofty things have happened, and so why not this too, right? And now to be supported by the Fulbright community, I mean, come on. I feel so thankful that somebody there is saying this is good work, and Dave, keep moving. You know, that's how I feel. I feel like somebody big, a big organization in the Fulbright saying, keep going. Just keep doing it. Keep building it. And I'm going to do that, you know.
So let's play this out. Let's say, and I fully expect this will happen, you meet those goals while you're in the Netherlands. This grows to more European countries, other continents.
Mm-hmm.
It's big.
Yeah.
What type of impact do you hope that has?
Ultimately, I want students to not feel alone. The end.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll go on with that, but I don't want people to feel alone. Because when you feel that way, you can't... I mean, when a person feels that way, he or she can't reach his or her own potential. I mean, we all suffer when a person feels alone.
Yeah.
You know, and... because then that person's just stuck in this bad feeling of not being worthy or not being. And so to share a story, for me to say, I want to know. Tell me. I want to know. And by the way, like, not just me, but potentially other people, right? Globally. Want to know your story, or they don't know to know you, to want to know your story, but let's share it anyway with them, a piece of it, a bit of it, and find yourselves connected. Again, you might never actually reach out to the person, right? That step may never happen, but that's okay, because I think there's empowerment in the sharing. There is power in the sharing. And in the listening, right? If I hear somebody who's going through something similar to me or near to me, I can feel powerful that I'm not alone in the world. And then you start the hard work of, like, finding your purpose, your why. Then you start, and that's not easy, but you start, but at least you're willing, right? If you feel connected, then I think students, anyone who's listening, would be more willing to do the work of finding their purpose.
Well, listen, you're doing amazing work, David. Wish you all the best for not only the Fulbright experience in the Netherlands, but just ongoing when you return, before you go.
Yeah.
You're doing amazing work. Keep it up. Can you tell people where they can find you? You know, a social media, website. What can you,
yeah,
can
sure.
you tell us?
Yeah, sure. So I'm you can find me David Tooney on Facebook, but then DK Tooney on Instagram, or at David Tooney on Twitter. Our various ways, and I'm really excited to bolster up a lot of that work and place while I'm away on the Fulbright, to really try to kind of zero in on better websites. So we have websites, but I'm a full-time teacher, a dad, everything else, pickleball player.
It's
hard to get those websites, but I'm going to put a lot of energy into that while I'm away too, and try to get the better website. So for now, it's like, well, the podcast can be heard on iTunes. It can be heard on SoundCloud. If you just search the Share Chair podcast, it comes up. I'm glad that it's the one that comes up. So that's good. So you can check all that out there in those places. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, listen, we'll have to do this again when you get back from the Netherlands.
Let's.
Yeah, to be continued.
Awesome. Thanks, Pete.
Thanks,
good
David.
Stuff.
Thanks for listening to Transforming Learning by CBD. Continue the conversation with us by visiting cbdconsulting.com/elevateedu, where you can contact a coach immediately or browse more resources like this one. For more podcast episodes, visit anchor.fm/cbdpodcast or subscribe to us on your favorite podcast app. Help us get the word out by leaving a review and rating, as well as sharing on your favorite social media platform. Remember to tag @CBD Consulting.